Hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, here with a great group of folks. Of course, later on in the show, we have got Candace here to address a question about someone who is returning to school and will be face-to-face or whatever, maybe in the sphere of, about face-to-face, with her ex, and she's very nervous about that. How are they going to relate? Is it going to be awkward? Of course it's going to be awkward, whatever, but Candace will say it more compassionately than I will. Then for our culture segment, we have Annie Downs, author of Let's All Be Brave, a woman, if you know her from the IF gatherings and beyond, including her blog and Twitter feed, then you know that Annie is fantastic, and she's here to talk to us about kind of living life full tilt and how that starts with very small decisions, but what God does with those can be pretty cool. And here we are, kind of living full tilt here in our roundtable discussion with a fun group of folks. We have Andrew, Allison, and Carrie here. Hey,
hello.
Guys.
Hello.
Totally full tilt.
To talk about how this applies to relationships, especially when you're dating, and you have to kind of move into those waters of like testing relationships. Mm. Okay. And I'm going to set the stage here because this is like, I have lived this. And I've, quite frankly, had some relationships implode as a result of testing them. But this idea of no longer do we live in these farming communities where you grow up with people who are potential mates.
It's not Little House on the Prairie, guys.
It is not. And that is extremely sad. I'm just saying right there. Because I think that the perfect date would be blowing up a deer bladder and just batting it around. Oh. And what happens.
You're welcome.
Is that a real thing they did?
But anyway, they totally did. The girls did it. They had a good time.
Wow.
But anyway, so you don't have these, like, I knew you from your infancy people where you can kind of figure out all their quirks and their dysfunctions and whatever and see if you can live with them. Now, sometimes you just marry someone and you're like, wow, you really are dysfunctional. And so how do you find out as much on the front end as you can, especially in an age of online dating, living away from your parents where you don't have that covering over them, moving into circles of multiple people, or you have different, you know, groups of friends who may not know one another. And so how do you invite friends into that to help you kind of scope people out? So it is a very intricate and difficult situation. And we're going to delve into each of your lives, I can tell you that, to talk about.
I can hardly wait. It's going to be so good.
So, the first thing I want to throw out there is, as you think of current or past relationships or even future relationships, what are your kind of biggest fears of the unknown? I mean, I think a lot of young adults are hesitant to really commit to relationships because they're like, what do I know everything I need to know? Am I sure about this person? Do I, you know, what are those things that you're kind of the nightmares that wake you up at night of like, I could marry this person and then discover that they are blah, 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 or just whatever. Even people who love Jesus, we're all messed up people. I'm just saying. So what are those kind of things that are scary for you as you think of the world of relationships and moving ahead?
Yeah, I think for me, the thing that like is a fear is coming to a point in the relationship where you feel like, oh, wow, this person has put them out there in one sense, and that's really not who they are. Mm-hmm. And actually, it goes back to in high school. I dated a girl who was in my youth group who went to a different high school, and hopefully she never listens to this. And but she was kind of
does
probably she's alive. So but she was kind of one way at youth group. Like she kind of did the Christian thing at youth group, and then I think when with her friends at school, you know, kind of acted a different way. And so I dated her for several months. And when things kind of broke off, I realized, wow, she was a lot different than I thought. Mm-hmm. Like she had a whole side of her that I didn't see. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's my biggest fear is sometimes you're so excited about a new relationship and you just feel like, oh, do I really know them?
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's hard because you know, regardless of how many seasons you walk through with them or situations or whatever, you are going to be dating and putting your best foot forward all the time, you mm-hmm. know? Yeah. And it's very easy to put your best foot forward when you're just going out to movies and doing pizza and mini golfing, okay? Yeah. I'm a very fun person in those scenarios.
I believe it.
I'm not as fun when someone's all up in my business or says something that I don't agree with or wants me to do something that I don't want to do or whatever, or I don't get my way. Okay, I'm just saying it.
Sure.
All right, what else?
I think I'd be kind of afraid of someone like faking their faith, because I've kind of seen that happen. Like, I'm old enough now that I've seen some of my friends get married to guys who are not as Christian as they thought that they were, and just like kind of watching them, and now they're stuck in a marriage that's really, really difficult, and they're trying to, you know, be faithful to God and be faithful to their marriage as they're walking through that, but it really, really sucks. So I guess that's kind of my fear.
And how do you figure that out? I mean, this is what I, and especially, this is where I think it especially comes into play online, because I have a lot of friends who are like, okay, how do you reconcile we are all broken, we are all sinners with you just don't even depend on Jesus? Kind of this, whether they're a cultural Christian or whether, you know, and they're all trying to say, well, you know, I've been kind of disenfranchised with the church, but I'm trying to get back in, you know, and they're all trying, air quotes, to do these things, you know, I mean, so it's like, is your searching, is your struggle legit, or are you just using it as an excuse to not even care?
Yeah, I think scripture is pretty clear about what to look for with people. You know, first in our own lives, what does spiritual fruit look like? What does our relationship with the Lord look like? And I think it's very difficult to discern that in someone else if it's not in you. I think you can have ideals. I've had girlfriends, and I think I went through this in my early 20s, where a little bit where just feeling like, well, if I'm feeling really weak in my faith, then I'm going to meet someone and they're going to be able to buoy me. And just that dependence on someone else to kind of help bring up my faith and mature me, because right now I just can't do it. And I think that scripture is pretty clear that it's got to be full dependence on Jesus, and we've got to be in the Word. And I think those are red flags. I think part of it is going back to the fear thing. A lot of people are afraid of being alone. And so there's a willingness to kind of gloss over what red flags we see, what concerns us, what may concern our friends. We're willing to kind of ignore that. And then we do end up in situations where we feel like as women, we haven't married someone who can spiritually lead us. Or perhaps as men, we don't have wives who, you know, who can help us in the ministry that God's called us to, or just they weren't honest about who they were. And all of a sudden, you feel like you've married a totally different person. And and I think there are lines to draw. I think it's a lot of discernment and wisdom. I love the book, The Meaning of Marriage by Tim Keller, because he talks about how when you get married, no matter how long you've been married, you're married to like five different people because everybody changes. And I think going back to your original question, my fear is, can I weather those storms, and can someone weather those storms of change with me? Because we're going to be different people by the end of our lives, hopefully maturing and growing in the Lord and with each other. But am I going to marry someone who can weather storms of life with me and not be afraid of those and
walk especially away? Because the way we date is totally just practicing breaking up. I mean, we don't date in a way that is like, yeah, how do I weather that storm? How do I commit to this person even through the struggle? How do I, the way we legitimize dating is, I don't really like this about him, so I'm going to break up and move on to the next person who I think might be a, quote, better fit with me, you know, more compatible. Let me do seven more assessments about this person. And
We do that with every part of life. We do that with our jobs. We do that with churches. We do that with friendships. And so, I mean, for me, it's a fear of commitment, not in the traditional sense of I'm afraid to commit, but I'm afraid that someone won't be willing to commit with me to endure.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I also see, and I have a conversation about this with one of my friends quite a bit, that, Nandra, you can tell me if this applies to guys. I think it totally applies to women, how we do not invest well in friendships. And so the minute the potential for a relationship comes along, we like glom onto it out of loneliness, out of desperation. And so then we get all about this relationship rather than having the strength in good, solid, godly friendships so that we're not constantly looking for that next thing or that relationship that's going to complete us or that, you know, I mean, not that relationships aren't good and we need to eventually leave and cleave if we're called to marriage, but still, you know, to have those solid friendships, those people that can check you, that can provide objectivity, that can help you rest in their love for you so that you're not looking for love in all the wrong places.
Oh, that's a good song.
That just sounded like a totally creepy, like, nighttime DJ voice.
Yeah, seriously.
Wow. All right.
We taped this at a bar at
good
midnight.
Good song.
But no, I think, I do think that is this exact Same thing for guys. And I think that if I was going to boil it down to one thing, you want to find somebody and you want to try to determine, are they filling their tank with the love of God? Like, are they learning how to, through all the things that they do in their life, to really fill their tank, their need tank with who God is? Or are they coming to this relationship like, I've had this need tank that's been empty for a long time and I hope you can fill it? Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, there are ways that we meet each other's needs in relationships, but the people that I think are most attractive and most ready for a relationship are the ones who know what it is to walk with God and who literally come to a place where it's like, you know, I really long for a relationship, but if I go another, you know, year or so without that, mm-hmm. then, you know, I'll be okay because of God in my life.
Yeah.
And that they really mean that. I mean, I think sometimes we can just slap that around like, oh, well, God's still on his throne, so, you know, my miserable life is fine.
Stitch that on a pillow.
Yeah, put that on your refrigerator. But yeah. I think that is...
We'll all die and go to heaven eventually.
But I think, you know, that's this type of stuff that you want to find out is like when they have a bad day or when their world crumbles in some way, what do they do? Like, mm-hmm. do they have a complete meltdown or do you see... Wow, when something hard happens, they know how to cast their cares on God and like mm-hmm. come to God mm-hmm. and say, you know, I'm in this season. It's not easy. It's not good. I don't like it, but I draw my strength from the Lord.
Yeah.
Because the scary thing is if they start to draw on you, like you have to get me through this. I can't get through myself, and I don't know how to do that with God. So mm-hmm. so like I'm leaning wholly on you to do that.
Okay, so I need to know, what are your strategies for doing this? Say, you know, y'all are in relationships or potential relationships. I want to know, when you think of this in your head, what are you actually planning to do? What are the questions you ask? Because no one wants to sit down. And we all want dating to be fun. No one wants to sit here and be like, how am I going to ferret out how legitimate this person is? And do they love Jesus? And how do they deal with conflict? And how, you know,
yeah.
So do you have questions in your mind that you know need to be answered? Do you have character things that you need to discern? Do you have people that you're going to bring into the mix and have them check this person out? What if you had to write down your little plan, your
that's
strategy?
A good one. You just listed a lot of good ones.
Yeah, I know.
That is
I'm
my plan.
Do that, yeah.
Yeah, that's my new plan.
That was not my plan, but it is now.
Lisa's question
you.
Is the plan. Yeah.
So, but I mean, like, really, like, when the rubber hits the road, what does that look like for you? Utilizing, like, your personality, the way you roll, so you're not all some weirdo, like, 12 questions, you know, AA program or something.
Yeah.
I'd say definitely draw other people into it because mm-hmm. like love isn't only blind, it's also stupid. Mm-hmm. And so like sometimes like you just like when you're like really attracted to somebody or you're trying to get to know them, like you mm-hmm. just kind of lose all your sanity
yeah.
and you miss seeing things that other people can see in that person. Mm-hmm. And so like I think a great strategy would just be to like bring like all the people who love you or have that person, bring all the people that loves them, you know, kind of into that and let them kind of evaluate that too. Not saying that, you know, everyone else's opinion is perfect or you should rely mm-hmm. on that in the same way you rely on the Holy Spirit, but
mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's one way to go about it too.
Okay.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things is I have a few, going back to your comment about relationships, I've got a few good girlfriends who have mm-hmm. really walked through some very difficult things with me, and I've done the same for them. And so if I'm interested in someone, I start to just kind of chat with them about this guy and just kind of say, here's what I'm noticing. What do you think about that? Mm-hmm. I mean, I agree with Allison. Love can be pretty stupid, and it can be blind. But I think part of it is, for me, is that true love is not necessarily those things, but mm-hmm. it says, this is what I'm willing to deal with in you. And when that person loves you back, it says, this is what I'm willing to deal with in you as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a two-way street. And so just inviting people into that process.
Mm-hmm.
I struggle with this, really, just because I feel like, not necessarily relationship history-wise, but just... I've had some very difficult things happen in my life, and I bring a lot to the table. And so I probably feel more on the defensive going into a relationship. Like, they're great and they're fine and they're wonderful, but I'm bringing all of this junk to the table. And so I feel like I have to put that myself through that process first.
Mm-hmm.
How do I share information? How do I talk about my relationship with the Lord? How do I show that, you know, sometimes I really love the Lord and I walk through difficult things and I do melt down. And it's not because I don't rely on Jesus, but because I do rely on him, that I lose it with him and I'm struggling and I'm trying to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a hard thing for me to figure out what to share, what not to share, and kind of that process to walk through to test that relationship, because I got some things that I could lay on the table mm-hmm. that would really test that relationship. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, no, it's good.
Yeah, I think you're right on, like, seeing them in different relationships, seeing them, how they interact with their family, mm-hmm. like their closest relationships. I think sometimes when you spend time with their family, you start to see who they are through their eyes. Mm-hmm. So you kind of see them through the eyes of the people that care about them most. And I think that is a good way to, you know, kind of learn. But I think all of this, you know, it's something that you do prayerfully and you do with intentionality, and you don't, you know, you don't rush into it. You know, I think it's like, Lord, help me to see. But also that I think we have to be careful that we don't, like, and Keller is really good on this, and that book, The Meaning of Marriage, mm-hmm. that we don't want to come to a relationship with, like, kind of our checklist.
Right.
Like, yeah. And it's like, okay, you've got, like, 9 of the 10, you know, or 90 of the 92, mm-hmm. which might be more of the case for a lot of people. But you know, that's not the way it is. You're really looking for, is this a person that first of all, is God leading us together? And I do think that's a good question to ask. It's like, mm-hmm. is God in this? And is God allowing us to move forward and to be honest in prayer and say, Lord, if this isn't a good fit, if us running together wouldn't be helpful for the things that we're called to do, then like, show us that early on, and not mm-hmm. like, help us not to, you know, spend a year, you know, hurting each other. And so I think seeing that's part of the process is mm-hmm. is asking God, is this what you're up to? And then really trying to discern that. And I think also having wise people, wise older couples that know you both mm-hmm. and that you can lean on. I'm a big proponent of pre-engagement counseling mm-hmm. where you start to wrestle with some of these big issues before you get engaged. Because once you get engaged, it's like you're kind of like you're committed. Mm-hmm. And then you start to wrestle with some of the hard things that, you know, might be reasons you wouldn't want to commit to this person.
Yeah.
So I think more couples, you know, should see that as part of your dating, as you get closer to engagement, some of these big questions that couples wrestle with in engagement, you might want to start talking about with wiser, older couples who can give you good counsel and who can say, yeah, this is a deal breaker. Yeah, this isn't. Because I think a lot of times in relationships, everybody's always like, oh, wow, is this a deal breaker? Is this a deal breaker? And it's like, you know, I'm much more interested in what older, wiser couples are speaking into the relationship than, you know, if like I was like, oh, she does this all the time. And it's like, yeah, that's because she's a woman.
Yeah.
You know, or, well,
and
or
I think
he's
it's
a man.
Tricky,
you know?
Because a lot of times, like if I were in a relationship, I would hear someone say that's probably a deal breaker. And I would be prone, if I'm really into the guy, to be like, well, I'm sure we can work that out, or I'm sure, you know, it's so easy, again, talking about how we can be blinded to start making excuses and to start. And I go back to when we had Bill and Pam Farrell on the show, and I thought it was so wise of them to say, look, you know, you will struggle. There will be difficult things. Both of you are sinners.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if you're signing up for something where you're constantly working and trudging through stuff and everything is a big drama fest, I mean, I think to myself, your relationship should not play out like an episode of Judge Judy. Okay? You don't. I mean, then you may have things where everything is like, well, we need to have another talk about this, or we need to have, you know. I mean, that is just hard. I mean, then there probably are things that individually you need to work on before, even if God is in that relationship and it has a future, mm-hmm. you might have some hard work to do individually first, mm-hmm. is all I'm saying. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know.
And Keller, I mean, we should have just had Tim on.
Sorry, because he's just the best. Yeah.
Well, another great point.
I was going to call him up and just say, hey, Tim.
Yeah. I'm his backup.
Exactly.
But he says, I think the best thing in that book is he says, when you're coming closer to marriage or even in marriage, that you should think about, like, the biggest danger for that relationship is your own selfishness.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yeah.
not the other person.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times in relationships, we're like so focused on, is this other person like what I'm looking for? Instead of, am I the person that they need?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think once you start making that switch where I need to become less selfish. I need to become more selfless.
Well, I think we know what Andrew's doing in his relationship.
Yeah. We'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, right.
No, good thoughts there.
Yeah, right.
That's good.
All right,
yeah.
Well, we're going to go ahead and wrap it. We obviously could just talk about this forever. And quite frankly, I will just update you on these three as updates are available with how they are doing in their relationship.
Oh. I feel like I just got a report card.
I'm just saying.
With a giant F on it.
This is how it goes down. All right, folks, we want you to write an iTunes review for the show, make sure that you hop on actually boundless.org/iTunes. We love it when you are in the fray with us doing that, giving us a review so we can let other people know about the show. Also, as we head into our culture segment, know that today's music is provided by Disciple. You will hear the songs Unbroken and Yesterday Is Over. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, Lisa. Thanks.
Inside my head, there's a war tonight. Still no end in sight. And every breath is cold as ice, but the fire will never die. Won't let myself be shaken by the way I see the times. There's an ending that's unseen that I choose to believe that I won't break.
All right, folks, as we open up this week's culture segment, we are pleased to have yet another fun friend. And especially when we have our single friends here, we love them because they're one of us. So today is no exception. We have Annie Downs on the phone. Hey, Annie.
Hi, good morning.
Great to have you. Those of you who know Annie or follow her, especially on social media or where she blogs and all that kind of stuff, know that she's an author. She speaks quite a bit. She's involved with you ladies, with the IF gatherings and other things. In fact, I was looking at your speaking roster and it just looks like you're all over the map, including like right now, apparently you're just sitting in a hotel room.
That's right. In Starkville, Mississippi, I'm speaking to a sorority house tonight, which is super fun. A really interesting, a little bit of a different venue, but I'm excited about it.
Those sororities, they can get crazy. So you got to tell them what's what.
That's right. And just remind them that, you know, every little thing matters.
It does.
So we need to be making good choices.
It does. Well, you are quite the author. In fact, we're going to talk today about your latest project, Let's All Be Brave, Living Life with Everything You Have, which apparently you indicate in the front end of the book that this book, as well as your two past ones, you have written largely in coffee shops. So that's a lot of consumption right there of coffee.
That's right. I know. Don't look at the budget. But yes, what? It is true. And you know what's even more hilarious is I don't drink coffee.
Okay.
So that's the crazy part. So, I know. I drink chai.
Okay.
Or tea.
With soy, right? Or something?
Yes, soy or almond milk. That's exactly right. Because I'm dairy free. And that's sad. No more pizza. No ice cream. That's so disappointing.
Yeah.
Such a boring eating life. But I feel with, you know, and a lot of people experience this, we all have busy lives and busy jobs, and so you have to kind of put in your body what'll make your body run the way it's supposed to. And so for me, that no longer includes milk from cows.
Well, after reading the book, I was kind of calling into question whether or not we could ever be friends after you had your moment.
Oh, no.
Well, you had that moment with the Bananas Foster pancakes where you decided you were going to have to eschew them, and that was very sad to me because I don't want to do that. So,
listen, me neither, sister. I love me some pancakes. Even yesterday, do y'all have Trader Joe's?
No, we are getting it this month. So it's,
You're going to love
it. It's like the second coming of Christ for us.
You can wait in line. Yes, I know. You need to go wait in line when it opens because you get cool stuff if you're one of the first people in the store.
Oh, okay.
Things I know from when I was 25 in Nashville. But they have, like, this gluten-free pancake mix, and I was like, yes! And then I looked at the ingredients. It was, like, number two was buttermilk. I was like, okay.
I totally bought that stuff. I went up because they have it now in Denver. So we have to make the little migration up there. I bought it, and I haven't tried going dairy-free yet, so I'm just going to eat it. I'm going to eat my pancake mix.
Yeah, just eat it.
Okay.
And, like, if you make it with almond milk, you're tons closer to being dairy-free.
Okay.
It's really about the steps, isn't it? It's just about the steps to get there.
It is. You know, and here's my step. When I go to McDonald's, I'm going to get a large fries, but I'm going to only eat like 3/4 of it instead of the whole thing. That's my first step towards better eating.
That is, if you can leave French fries in the bottom of any container,
yeah,
you are going to have a closer seat in heaven than I will, because I cannot do it.
Okay, well, we'll see how it goes down. We'll see. I'm just doing baby steps. Baby steps.
That's right.
All right, well, let's go ahead and dive into this book, because this is a really a fun read, and this is a great application for anyone who, you know, we talk to people all the time on this show who are like, am I living the life I was meant to live? Is this where God wants me to be? What should I do? I want to do all these things, but I'm fearful to give it a shot. Or am I really even capable of this? And so people are going to be all just twisted up going into reading this book.
Yeah. And you know what's so interesting is even the joke of just like talking about the French fries. I mean, that really is what Brave looks like. Brave looks like these everyday little steps that lead you to the next brave thing. It doesn't have to be these massive moves across the world or total job changes or like these big, huge steps. It looks like I'm going to eat less fries than I did yesterday,
mm-hmm.
or I'm going to send one email that makes me nervous that I wouldn't have sent yesterday. So I think we're right on. It's about the everyday courage things that I think are what make the difference in the long run.
Yeah. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, I mean, obviously there are many probably reasons that you, you know, put pen to ink for this book, but what other than people saying brave is a cool thing, brave is probably, you know, Jesus was brave, that whole idea.
Yeah.
What is really the value in being brave? What is, if you put two lives together, one is one of safety and comfort and whatever, and the other mm-hmm. one is stepping out, being brave, even in these small ways. What's the value in that for the believer, Annie?
Well, you know, I think it's how we were meant to be. I think we were meant to not operate under the idea that whatever the fear voices say is what we need to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
I do think there is caution and wisdom. And, you know, if you hear in your head it's dangerous to jump out of a plane without a parachute, you're right. You mm-hmm. know, like, you don't need to ignore that and be like, no, I'm going to be brave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there are caution voices. But I really think that God created us to be brave and to make brave choices. Now, what I think Christian culture has done to some degree, and this was my experience growing up in a church, was that they really defined for me, this is what brave looks like. If you do this, the church thinks you're brave. If you do this, the church thinks you're brave. And it was all these things that I didn't want to do with my life. I didn't want to move to Africa. Mm-hmm. I don't like being hot. I like the internet. You know, like, mm-hmm. I don't want to live in a hot hut, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That was never what I pictured as my life. I wanted to be a school teacher. I wanted to teach elementary school, and I wanted to coach high school sports. And so I kind of grew up thinking, oh, well, there are levels to being a Christian, and I'm never going to be at the best level because I'm not willing to move to Africa or move far away or give up these things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the older I got, the more I started to realize that as we pursue what God has put in our heart individually, uniquely, each of us are so different. If we go after, like, here's what this looks like for me to be brave, for me to be different, for me to go after the things that God's put in me, that's what changes the world. Not all of us looking at the mold and going, okay, I'm to be the best Christian, I have to look like that. Instead, it's more like, okay, how did God make me? And what does it look like for me to go after these brave things in my life, even if someone else doesn't think it's brave or it's not labeled as brave by our culture, to go, no, that was hard for me to do that, to send that email, to volunteer to play guitar for the first time at our youth group at my church, to go on a date with a guy that I don't know very well from our church or from online or whatever, you know, just kind of these little brave steps. I think if we all do that, that's what's going to really impact our culture.
Yeah. And you really do make a point in the book near the beginning about the value of just starting, just doing something. And kind of we talked about that a little bit. And you use the example of even as you began to write, you know, that fear of like staring at a blank screen and figuring out what in the world, what words am I going to put on here? But to just do that one next thing. What are some other ways? And I'm going to get into here a little bit talking about a couple of your moves that you made, too. But what are some good examples for young adults of small ways that they can take one step that's going to just move them into a little bit of decision making that may end up opening up a huge opportunity?
Yeah. You know, when I look in my life at moments like that and opportunities like that, and a lot of the young adults that I know, I think of things like going on a mission trip. Mm-hmm. Even if it's local and you're, or volunteering at your church, I lead a small group of college students, of college girls, and I said, okay, next Easter, we're all going to volunteer on Sunday morning, even if that makes you nervous, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think it could be that easy as like volunteering at your church. I think it could be, have you always wanted to learn another language? Are you just willing to Google what it would take to learn that language? Or have you always had a dream in your heart to sing? Have you told anybody? Could you just tell one person? You know, I think that's the power to just start, to just do those first little steps of like, okay, I'm going to say out loud that I have a dream to do something, or that I want to try something, or that I want to go somewhere. Because once you say it out loud, it kind of gets a little bit of its own life, and you get to go after, okay, now that I've said that out loud, what would the next step be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so, and to that point, a couple of the examples that you do share are of a couple moves that you made. The first one, you know, having grown up in Georgia, and then you kind of walk through this story that's a little bit bizarre of the decision to move to Nashville. which I'm kind of like, okay, if all of this is about the next step, like that seemed like kind of this crazy out of the blue thing. So if not everything can be that drastic, how did you even come to that conclusion that Nashville would be a good idea, that you should even uproot and go there? And how did you reconcile that really that was a necessary step?
Yeah, it certainly wasn't the next step I wanted at the time. It wasn't even really a dream in my heart. I had already started writing, and I had pursued writing to some degree as far as going to writers' conferences and taking those little steps of like, okay, what would it look like if I wrote for a magazine? What would it look like if I started a blog? You know, I kind of had started my writing like that. And then, I mean, really the Nashville thing came, I had felt some unsettling on my insides. And when I'd pray, I'd feel like, man, something is changing. I need to like pay attention. It feels like change is coming. It's almost like when you're watching storm clouds, mm-hmm. it's not raining on you yet, but you're recognizing that it is going to rain. And that's kind of how I felt. I felt like there was something moving and shifting, but I couldn't really identify what it was. And then really, I mean, as you read in the book, the Lord just kind of dropped it on me and just kind of dropped the city of Nashville in my heart. And I thought, well, I don't want to go there. I don't have friends there. I don't have any people. I mean, that's all I keep thinking is I didn't have any people. I didn't have any people there. And that's kind of the currency that matters most to me is where are my people? And I didn't have any people there. And as you read through that chapter, there were all these little moments where I was like, okay, well, if the Lord does this, or if this works out, if my house sells, if I can find a place to live, if, you know, all these, like, checkpoints along the way that kept being a green light, and all of a sudden, you know, 8 months after that first time I thought, maybe I'm supposed to move to Nashville, I lived in Nashville.
Yeah. Well, and then you ended up in another move that you kind of didn't want. You had the opportunity to go and live in Edinburgh. And basically, you know, it's funny that, you know, folks, you have to read this, the descriptor of it, because it's actually very funny. Her talking about how, you know, okay, this is a missions thing I can do because they speak English and they have Starbucks and all this kind of stuff. So that was awesome. But then you realize that maybe God sadly is calling you back to the States in a move that you probably didn't want to make. And so were you kind of trying to look, maybe throw a few other fleeces out to make sure that maybe that wasn't quite what he was telling you?
Exactly. That's exactly, you know, and the interesting thing was I moved to Nashville in 2008 and the opportunity to move to Edinburgh, Scotland came in 2011, January of 2011 is when that first, the conversation was real with the church over there. And I remember thinking, this is so much easier than Nashville, you know, which is hilarious because Nashville and Atlanta are 3 hours apart and Nashville and Edinburgh, Scotland are 18 hours in an airplane apart, you know. And but because I'd seen, I mean, the Lord just knew exactly what I needed because I'd seen him be faithful in that little 3 hour car ride of a move. And I thought, okay, I had no people. He gave me people. I had no home. He gave me home. I had no job. He gave me a job. I mean, the Lord just provided over and over, not without weeping and gnashing of teeth, to be sure. I mean, there were hard days and still are there hard days. But when the opportunity to move to Edinburgh came, I thought, well, this feels like the right thing, and it's, and the people that are wise in my life are, you know, and I think that's a big deal is when you want to be brave, when you want to take some steps, there are people you've got to go, hey, does this feel right to you? Does this sound right to you? Where you, you know, and those people were all going, yeah, this is right. Edinburgh feels like the right move. And when all that was working out, I was kind of going, oh, okay, well, I know what God can do. I mean, I have done this before. Now that I've done this before, I can do it again. And I honestly thought, like you said, when I moved to Edinburgh, I kind of thought, okay, I guess I'm going to live in the UK for the rest of my life. And it was about a month before I was scheduled to come back home for Thanksgiving because my mother insists that all the children be in the house at Thanksgiving. So I was coming home for Thanksgiving that it just came real clear, like, oh, I'm the right thing for me to do next is to move back to Nashville. And this was just a short season, and I'm so grateful for it. And I would love a chance again. But yeah, it was, there have been some interesting moves in the last 6 years, but I don't think that's what determines courage either. I don't think your ability or your chances or your opportunities to move to other cities or other states or other countries. I think you could stay in the same city you grew up in your whole life and still live a really brave life.
Sure. Well, and let's talk a little bit, because you move into a section of the book that I think is really great about understanding how you are loved and cultivating a community of love. And how would you say, Annie, love allows us to be brave, allows us to step out, to have that, you know, to have that surrounding us. And what does that look like?
Yeah, you know, I think that love almost feels like our safety net in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I know when I am out doing a brave thing or attempting a brave thing or trying something new or do, you know, so for me, sometimes, a lot of times it looks like I'm going to a brand new speaking event that I've never done before, a crowd I've never been in front of before. And I know no matter how that event goes, when I go home, there are people there who love me and who don't love me based on performance and don't love me based on, I don't have to come home and replay my event to them and then decide then whether I'm worthy of love, right? Mm-hmm. So there are just these opportunities when you let people in like that, when you have friends and family that care for you, which sometimes there are seasons where there are a lot of them and there are seasons when it is one friend or two friends that you're like, man, when I need someone to remind me that I'm loved, that I'm allowed to fail, that I can try things. Because I think trying things and them not working out isn't necessarily failure. When things don't work out, you just try something new, right? You just try something else. And so, but having people who love you and you feel like they are there caring for you and are part of your life just gives you the opportunity to be a little bit braver.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and in light of that, you actually talk, and I referenced this when I introduced you, about how you are single. And of course, many of us who are walking the road of singleness, it's not like we were 15 and we're like, if there's one thing I'm going to be, it's single when I'm in my 30s, you know?
Yeah, right. So,
but you actually use that as an example. In fact, you talk about the value and even the bravery of holding on and what it looks like to walk through the season you're in. And sometimes just the best thing you can do is trust and be present where you are and do, you know, I always say, you know, this is loosely quoting Elizabeth Elliot, doing that next thing that's in front of you, even while trusting, you know, not knowing where you'll be in a year or two, relationally or otherwise.
Right.
What is that looking like for you right now, Annie, where you are just in looking towards your future, but still kind of maximizing the season that you're in?
Yeah, you know what's interesting? That's such a great question because that's something that me and I have a counselor that I love. I think really sane people go to counseling. You know, I think it's really smart. to go to counseling. And one thing she and I are really working on and talking about is, like, what does it look like for me to live, to craft a really full life, whether a man ever moves into my house with me or not?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Like, how, mm-hmm. and so, because what is hard for me to be brave about or hard for me to embrace is spending money on housewares and on, so for right now, I'm buying a new comforter, which I know doesn't sound brave at all to the average listener, but to me, it is a big statement to me to go, okay, I'm willing to invest in something that I thought was going to be a part of my life when I was married. Sure. Like, I thought I'd have nice things in my house when I got married. Well, I'm 34, and I'll be 35 in July, so I'm 34 and a half or something, and I need to be brave enough to go, this is the best life that God has for me today, and I need to cheer for that and support that and be brave enough to agree with that, to agree that God has given me everything I need today, and if I want a nicer comforter in my house or if I want a new couch, then I should save and buy those things instead of waiting. You know, I think it's brave to step into something that you thought was for the next part of your life, right? Like for me, that's buying a comforter. Mm-hmm. You know, for some mm-hmm. people, it could be buying a house
yeah.
or going on a trip or, you know, volunteering in a certain part of the church or volunteering in a nonprofit somewhere that you thought, oh, I think my wife and I or my husband and I would do that together. Well, I still want to do that, so I'm just going to start doing that.
Right. Yeah, very true. And you never know where that decision will precipitate another decision and another and another. And, you know, brave people and people who are trusting God attract not only, you know, for a spouse or whatever, but just even in community, other brave people, and together can accomplish,
yeah, that's right.
Accomplish great things.
That's right. And I think it does take courage to do that. It takes courage to say, I am embracing where I am today.
Right. Absolutely. Well, we barely even scratched the surface in this conversation. I have been talking with Annie Downs about her book, Let's All Be Brave, Living Life with Everything You Have. Annie, thank you so much. And thanks for jumping in here at the Boundless Community. Folks who want to find out more about Annie, you can go to Annie F, as in Frank, or F as in, like, what's your real middle name?
It's even weirder than Frank. It's Foss. F-O-S-S. It's super weird.
Okay, so Annie F, as in Annie Foss, Downs.com. And certainly follow her on Twitter, where she's very active, at Annie F Downs. And so you can just latch onto her there and learn more about what she's up to. So Annie, thank you so much for being part of this conversation.
Oh, thanks for having me. I love you guys. Yesterday.
Yesterday is over. The sun is finally set on all the words you said, but you hold on to everything. Open up your head. Yeah, you hold on to everything. Open up your hands and let go.
Okay, well, as we wrap up this week's show with our inbox and answer a listener question, I want to go ahead and introduce Candace Waters. Welcome, Candace.
Thanks, Lisa.
Great to have you here. For those of you who are listening via the radio, Candace is the founder of Boundless.org, and so we love bringing her onto the show from time to time to answer especially relationship questions, because that is her wheelhouse, and we love the advice that she gives on that front. And so, Candace, I have one for you. Here we go.
Let's hear it.
All right. This listener says, my past boyfriend and I dated for 4 months, but things didn't work out. I think I've done well with grieving and letting the Lord heal my heart, but I still have an issue. We go to the same school and have a lot of the same classes. So lately I've been feeling afraid of going back to school for fear of the pain of seeing him again. How do I stop feeling afraid of seeing him?
I think this is a matter of perspective. Looking back, looking forward, and also trying to just have a way of seeing this that isn't so difficult. And one of my first encouragements would just be to focus on the task at hand, which is the work of being a student, and ask the Lord to help you be diligent and be faithful and focus on the stewardship opportunity you have to study hard and pay attention in class and really pour yourself into the learning. And not in a way that is denying the pain and heartache of a hard breakup or the disappointment that things didn't work out, but just, you know, as a matter of, okay, it didn't work out, let's get back to work, let's be thankful that you have meaningful work to do and work hard at it. And it's okay to pour yourself into that. I would encourage you not at all to pull back from school, because that's the primary reason you're there. And so you wouldn't want to be skipping classes, you know, in an effort to not see him, or avoiding the library in an effort to not see him. That would be really counterintuitive and just kind of self-defeating. But what if the fact that you are still afraid of him and the pain, what does that say about how you conducted the relationship? Because I think it's important to say what went wrong here so that you don't do it again in the future. And you know, it sounds like maybe you were acting too married to him. Your lives were too enmeshed with each other. And so it became really more like a divorce when you decided not to date anymore. And it's a cautionary tale for all of the singles listening to say, when you're dating someone, remember, this person may not end up being your spouse. You might be dating somebody else's future spouse, and act accordingly. You know, treat them with respect and have as the standard the idea that when you break up, if it doesn't work out, could you sit side by side in church and not feel ashamed or not feel embarrassed or not just feel like you want to break down in tears? If the answer to that is no, then you're not dating in a way that's honoring the Lord or following the biblical model for being above reproach. But, of course, you're not just saying, okay, what did I do wrong? You're saying, how do I go about my day-to-day life going forward? And this is where I think it's time to not just focus on, you know, quote-unquote, healing your heart, which is what you said you think the Lord has done, but really focus on growing in your relationship with the Lord and trusting in him. And on the days where it's painful, thanking him for the opportunity that the pain gives to remind you to pray more and to ask him to sanctify you, to make you more like Christ, to ask him to redeem a broken situation. You may never feel totally over that pain. You know, there may always be a little bit of ouch that goes with thinking back, depending on how close you were to this guy. But that doesn't mean the Lord can't redeem that and use what Satan would want to use for evil in your life, use it for good.
Yeah.
And so I would just encourage you to ask the Lord to redeem what is a painful situation.
Yeah, good thoughts, Candace. And as always, I love it when you know, you remind us that, yeah, that connection there, we have to be able to treat one another as brothers and sisters in Christ. We have to be able to frame it in that way. We can't let this become a total drama fest. So as always, great thoughts there. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks, Lisa.
All right. Well, that's it for this week's show, everyone. As always, we want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org if you have a question for our inbox or something that we can address for you, or if you just want to say hello. And of course, those of you who are new to the Boundless Show via radio, we definitely want to hear from you. That is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.